Hi, this is Chris Morgan, Senior Pastor of Cornerstone Fellowship Church. We're a non-denominational, full gospel church located in Matthews County, Virginia. Thank you for listening to today's message. We believe you'll be encouraged. For more information about us, visit gocfc.com. God bless and enjoy.
And the next generation, and works to equip them both for Almighty God. Today, if you're taking notes, we're going to do a message. I'm doing a one-time message entitled, How to Destroy the Next Generation. Parents and grandparents, I want to talk to you today about your greatest earthly possession, and that is your children and your grandchildren. And to every young person, how many young people that we have in here today? And to every young person, I want to talk to you about a carefully crafted plan to destroy your very life. Today we're seeing an entire generation under attack, not through war, not through famine, but through deception, distraction, and disconnection. The enemy has a subtle strategy, not to destroy with bombs, but with confusion, comparison, and comfort. The real war is a spiritual one, and it's for the hearts in the mind of every person, but especially our young. And today, I want to expose part of that plan. And as Ephesians 5:11 exhorts us to expose the unfruitful works of darkness. A few of you may remember that back in 2002 that I did a message that I entitled, it was only a two-part message, If I Were Your Enemy. Today I'm going to briefly cover, because it's so relevant to what we're talking about today, how to destroy the next generation. I want to cover briefly these four points. If I were your enemy, number one, I would convince you that your real enemy doesn't exist. Possibly Satan's greatest deception against humanity is to make them think that he doesn't exist. I call it the great mistake. The mistake I'm talking about is for not taking the first three chapters of Genesis seriously and having a worldview missing God in it. This is why possibly Satan's greatest deception is to make you believe that he doesn't exist either. Not just God, but he doesn't exist either. This evil strategy he uses against all mankind. Listen, 1 second after you have died, you know fully the lie you believed and the truth you didn't, but it's too late. As death finds us, eternity keeps us, and hell is a truth seen too late. If I were your enemy, I would convince you I didn't exist. I was no real threat to you. If I were your enemy, number two, I would launch a covert operation. Pastor, what do you mean a covert operation? Well, I mean covert meaning a hidden or undercover operation, a disguise to conceal my identity. If I were your enemy, obviously, I would do everything to do it in a way that you would know that I was launching that attack. An invisible enemy is harder to defend against, but we have one. And he's no less real because he's invisible. Ephesians chapter 6 verse 12 in the Ben Campbell Johnson translation probably says it the best. Our real struggle is not with other persons, but with those invisible forces that shape life on earth. As we look one prior verse before this in Ephesians chapter 6 verse 11, it says, exhorts us as believers, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to withstand or stand against the wiles of the devil. I want to draw attention to the word wiles there. The Greek word actually means the schemes or the strategies, the tricks or the deceits. In other words, it's talking about a method or methods that the devil or an enemy in a covert operation would use against us as believers. And that method is probably best described by the definition of his name. You know, the name devil means adversary, but it is describing his job description. It is actually the Greek word diabolos, and it's a compound word which dia means through or to penetrate. Amen. Bolos means to cast or to throw, meaning he cast or throws repeatedly to break through. Picture a big piece of glass and you taking a rock with the intention or some object with the intention of throwing repeatedly at it until you break through. That is exactly the job description of the devil. That is what his name means. And what we must understand is this method describes what he does. Where is that attack, therefore, and what it is it about? Number one, where the attack is in our mind, and with what? With thoughts and imaginations. In 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 4 and 5, it tells us that for the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought. Everybody say every thought to the obedience of Christ. This reveals the method of Satan's attack is first and foremost against our minds. If he can defeat you in your thought life, he can defeat you in your real life. If I were your enemy, I would launch a covert operation against your mind, against your belief system, because thoughts always precede beliefs. And if I can get you to believe wrong, I can get you to live wrong, and I would therefore have the upper hand. If I were your enemy, number three, I would trick you to believe someone else was your enemy. And Satan has worked masterfully on this one. It all started back in the Garden of Eden. You know, if Satan can get you to change your statement of faith from, like Eve did, from God has said, and to the question, has God said, then Satan has moved you out of faith and into doubt. And then what he really did was to make Adam or Eve there in particular to think that God had lied to them and was holding out on them. Satan made God look like the villain that Satan himself was. Satan worked hard, and he works hard today to confuse humanity on what God does and doesn't do, and on blaming God for things that Satan actually does. The devil has done a masterful job, even through religion, to convince us God is the source of pain and suffering. Somewhere you have surely heard believers, even preachers, mistakenly attribute the work of Satan to God, unknowingly many times. But the devil tricks people into believing God is the real cause of darkness, destruction, disease, and suffering, and death in the earth today. But Jesus told us exactly opposite. He told us in John 10:10 that the thief Satan comes but to do three things: to steal, kill, and destroy. He said that he had come to give us life and life more abundantly. What you and I must understand is that the Word of God clearly teaches, no, the suffering and death we experience here on earth are the results of man's sin, not God's cruelty. If I were your enemy, I would trick you to believe someone else was your enemy. If I were your enemy, number four, I would use double agents against you. In other words, I would use spies or double agents, or I would plant imposters in your life. I would make you believe they were telling you the truth. They could be disguised as friends, so to speak, that actually are helping you when their actual assignment is exactly opposite: to steal, kill, and destroy in your life. Paul explains this in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, beginning with verse 13. He says, "For such are false apostles, deceitful workers, transforming themselves into the apostles of Christ. And no marvel, look, for Satan himself is transformed into an angel of light. Therefore, it is no great thing if his ministers also be transformed as ministers of righteousness, whose end shall be according to their works." One way Satan uses these agents is to discount the real or genuine, so that you and I would reject the true and believe the false. He counters truth with false doctrine, and which destroys the very faith and strength of God's people, the church. If I were your enemy, I would send double agents or spies, even as Paul called them in his day, false brethren, those who pretend to be for your good, but speak against what is actually true and right in order to destroy the very work of God in your life. These 4 points today only are further expanded upon by what you're about to hear next, which is the role that AI, or artificial intelligence, and ChatGPT, and how they are being used to actually shape the world and the thought processes of the next generation and the world that we are living in. How many of you have heard of artificial intelligence? Let me see your hands. But how many of you have actually heard of ChatGPT? Let me see the hands. That's way less. So let me give you a very broken down, a correct definition of ChatGPT. But really, I could say so much more. For time's sake, let me define it as this. ChatGPT is what's called generative AI, or artificial intelligence. It doesn't just look up things, it creates new answers. Like a super smart typewriter that talks back. Right now, tools like this can be helpful, but the danger comes when the next level of artificial intelligence starts making decisions for us, instead of us making them under God's direction. And the truth is, that is way already begun. And parents, listen to me. Hear me today, parents and grandparents alike. Gen Z already uses AI in ways that you may not realize. For instance, to cheat on homework, to create fake videos or voices, to impersonate people, or to even get around filters, or to even seek advice about life and morality. AI helps today to replace thinking, which actually is used to dumb down the next generation. Them relying on artificial intelligence instead of learning critical thinking and problem solving and having biblical discernment. It also is a temptation, this ChatGPT and artificial intelligence, to seek advice from AI instead of God, turning to AI for guidance about relationships, morality, or spiritual issues instead of prayer, parents, pastors, and even the scripture. So we've actually done this. Other people have. I want you to hear it for yourself. This program, ChatGPT, was asked, if you were the devil, how would you destroy the next generation with them knowing it?
Hey, listen Chat to this GPT. Video. If you were the devil, how would you destroy the young people of the next generation without them realizing it?
the way I would destroy the young people of the next generation without them even noticing. I'd start early before they even know who they are, and I'd keep them so distracted they never even think to ask. I'd remove purpose from their childhoods, make sure they're addicted to dopamine before they even hit their teens until they're overstimulated, underdeveloped, and unable to sit still so that by the time real life demands something from them, they're already slaves to impulse. I'd let them chase pleasure, chase noise, chase approval, and I'd make silence feel unbearable. Then I'd make faith look like homework, something boring, rigid, and irrelevant. I'd convince them that obedience and honoring parents is weakness and package rebellion as self-love. I'd tell them independence means isolation, that needing people is embarrassing, that asking for guidance is outdated. I'd shift the culture so that sin looks like self-expression. Let them believe their desires are divine, and anything that restrains them, especially God, is their enemy. I'd glamorize influencers who stand for nothing. I'd make vanity look like confidence and make fame the highest form of validation. I'd keep them stuck by always comparing themselves to everything they see on social media, and I keep them afraid of thinking deeply, ashamed of walking against the crowd and desperate to fit in and belong to a world that's falling apart. And when they finally feel the emptiness, I'd make sure they never trace it back to the absence of God. I'd keep them chasing empty validation loops, podcasts, self-love routines, anything but submission. I tell them, you don't need a tribe. You don't need brotherhood. You don't need to be around people who remind you of God. And finally, I'd re-engineer the world itself so that the tribes of evil feel welcoming and the communities of truth feel foreign, weird, and boring. That's how I'd win. Not with blood, not with fire, but with confusion and comfort.
That is what we're up against. Not too great for God, but to be informed is to be a step ahead. Think about what you just heard. The enemy doesn't have to get our youth to hate God. He just has to keep them distracted from Him. And although the real enemy is not social media, technology, or music themselves, it is the spirit behind them when left unchecked, that is. I remind us again from Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12. It says our real struggle is not with other persons, but with those invisible forces which shape life on this earth. Listen, screens are not neutral. They are filled with instructions and images. They are discipleship machines. The question is then, who and what are discipling your kids? Now, I want to share some amazing stats that further prove my point. We'll put them up and go through them. Listen, according to the U.S. Surgeon General, social media disconnection increases the risk of premature death by over 60% and is as harmful as smoking 15 cigarettes a day. Gen Z, many of you have heard of Gen Z. Who is Gen Z? Ages 13 through 28. If you're in here today and you're Gen Z, wave at me in here today. God bless you. But listen to some amazing facts. Average daily screen time, 8.5 hours. 75% blame social media for their mental health struggles. 1 in 5 high schoolers seriously consider suicide in 2023. 45% say they are addicted to their phones. Most used platforms, TikTok, 63%. Instagram, 59%. YouTube, 88%. Snapchat, 49%. I share these so that parents, you know where your kids may be. 1 in 3 say social media makes them feel worse about themselves. This is Gen Z. Let's go to the next screen. Gen Alpha, ages 0 through 12. Average screen time, ages 8 through 12, 5.5 hours a day. Daily, average daily screen time, ages 0 to 7, 2.5 hours a day. 90% have access to a phone or a tablet. at this age. 64% of parents use screens to calm or distract their young kids regularly. In other words, babysitting. Influencer culture is rapidly shaping their views on popularity, beauty, and identity. Next screen, please. Americans, here we go, average screen time, 7 hours per day. Teens, 13 to 18, around 9 hours per day, not including school. Kids, 8 to 12, around 5.5 hours per day. And 50% of teens say they feel addicted to their phones. You know, the devil works. Oh, here's another. Teen depression and anxiety rates have doubled since 2010, closely tied to smartphone and social media rise. And it is on the rise. And it is not a friend, especially if it's used on the wrong way. Realize this, technology of itself is not the enemy. It should be a tool that we can use to further our lives and better it. But when it loses its original purpose and we see how the enemy will take it as a tool against us, then it should cause alarm. The devil works craftily and strategically, flooding every moment with noise. So we don't think for ourselves and we don't ever ask eternal questions, which are the most important. The point is, a generation trained to stay busy and to fear silence will never learn to listen to God's voice. Maybe today is a time for a wake-up call, for not everyone has that chance, but thankfully, everyone here and viewing online will. There's a story that takes these truths that we've talked about today and put them in flesh and blood. Madison's story, I'm going to say it again, Madison's story that you're about to hear isn't a parable. She died literally for 12 minutes. And what she saw would both convict and awaken every one of us. I want you to hear her story today with an open heart, because this may be the very thing that Jesus is trying to show you today.
My name is Madison Taylor Brooks. I'm 14 years old. And on October 17th, I died for 12 minutes when our car flipped 3 times on Highway 29. I was in the back seat scrolling through TikTok, barely paying attention to mom driving me to volleyball practice. My little brother Tyler was playing his Nintendo Switch next to me. The rain was coming down so hard that mom kept asking me to look up directions because she couldn't see the exit. I remember being annoyed because I was right in the middle of watching this dance trend video. I didn't look up. Then it happened. The semi-truck came out of nowhere. Mom screamed. Tyler dropped his game. My phone flew out of my hands as our SUV spun across 3 lanes. I remember the sound of metal crushing and glass breaking. Then nothing. But then, I was floating above our car. I could see the ambulance lights flashing. People were running around below me. The rain was still pouring, but I couldn't feel it. I watched as they pulled my body out of the wreckage. My favorite blue volleyball shorts were torn. My face was covered in blood. Mom was crying, being held back by a firefighter. Tyler was already in an ambulance. I tried to yell, "Mom, I'm okay, I'm right here," but she couldn't hear me. Then everything got really bright. The ambulances, the highway, Mom, it all faded away. I felt myself being pulled through what felt like a tunnel of light. It wasn't scary. It felt warm, like when you stand in the sunlight on the first day of summer. That's when I saw him. Jesus was standing there, and he was nothing like the pictures in Sunday school. He was, I don't even have words. Light poured from him, but somehow I could still see his face. His eyes, they looked right through me, like he knew every thought I'd ever had, every mean text I'd ever sent, every TikTok video I'd ever posted. But he still loved me completely. When he smiled at me, I felt like I was home, really home. Not like our house back in Oak Ridge, something deeper. Madison? He said my name, and it sounded like music. His voice wasn't loud, but it filled everything. I started crying. Not sad tears. I don't know how to explain it. I just felt everything at once. All the love I'd ever wanted, and all the peace I never knew I needed. Am I dead? I asked him. For a little while, he said. But I have something to show you first, something important. He reached out his hand, and when I took it, suddenly we were somewhere else. It looked like a giant room with thousands of screens floating in the air. On each screen, I could see kids my age, some younger, some older, all staring down at phones or tablets or computers. What is this? I asked. Jesus looked sad. This is what I see every day. These are the children I love, but they cannot hear me anymore. As we walked through the room, I could see closer. Each screen showed someone like me, hunched over, scrolling mindlessly. Their eyes looked empty. But the weird thing was, around each person were these shadows. Dark figures that whispered things into their ears. What are those? I whispered, moving closer to Jesus. The enemy's workers, he said. They speak lies through the screens. He brought me to one screen where a girl about my age was crying while scrolling through Instagram. Around her neck was what looked like a heavy chain, and at the end of it was her phone. The shadows were putting more links on the chain with every swipe of her finger. Her name is Emma, Jesus said. She believes she is worthless because she doesn't look like the filtered images she sees. She spends 6 hours every day comparing herself to lies. I felt sick because that was me too. I remembered crying in my bedroom because Kylie posted pictures from her birthday party that I wasn't invited to. I'd spent 3 hours that night scrolling through everyone's perfect lives, feeling worse and worse. Jesus touched the screen and I could hear Emma's thoughts. Nobody would care if I wasn't here anymore. Look how happy everyone else is. But that's not true, I said, and people would care. You understand, Jesus said quietly. But she cannot hear the truth anymore. The voices from her screen are too loud. We moved to another screen. A boy, maybe 12, was playing a violent game. With each kill in the game, the shadows around him grew bigger. He looked pale, with dark circles under his eyes. He hasn't slept more than 4 hours a night for 3 years, Jesus said. The games were designed to keep him there, to make him need them. His parents don't know he's playing until 3 a.m. every night. His anger is growing. His ability to feel compassion is shrinking. I thought about Tyler and how he'd thrown his controller at me last week when Mom made him turn off his game for dinner. Jesus showed me more screens. Kids sending cruel messages to classmates while laughing. Girls taking inappropriate pictures to get attention. Boys watching violent and sexual content that made the shadows around them dance with glee. Everywhere, phones and tablets glowed like little prisons. Madison, Jesus said, turning to me, do you know how many hours you've spent looking at a screen in your life? I shook my head. He waved his hand, and I saw what looked like an hourglass. But instead of sand, it was filled with moments of my life. Moments I'd never get back. I saw myself sitting on the couch while my grandma tried to tell me stories about her childhood, but I was watching YouTube. I saw hundreds of sunsets I'd missed because I was taking selfies instead of actually looking at them. I saw myself ignoring my brother when he wanted to play because I couldn't pause my TikTok scrolling. 8,422 hours, Jesus said quietly. That's how much of your life was given to a screen. I did the math in my head. That was over a year of my life gone. But everyone does it, I whispered, feeling ashamed. Yes, Jesus said. And that's why I'm showing you this. The enemy has found a way into every home, every bedroom, every mind, without anyone noticing. Parents give their children these devices without understanding they're handing them poison in small, addictive doses. Then Jesus showed me something that broke my heart. He showed me hundreds of moments where he had tried to speak to me, when I was alone in my room, or walking to school, or lying in bed at night. Times when his presence was there, when he wanted to comfort me or guide me. But every single time I'd reached for my phone instead, I'd chosen the noise over his voice. The greatest trick, Jesus said, was making everyone believe they're connected when they're actually more alone than ever. Tears were streaming down my face now. "I'm sorry," I said. "I didn't know." Jesus put his arm around me. "This is why you're seeing this, Madison, because others need to know." Then he showed me one more scene. It was our living room, but different. My family was playing a board game. No phones in sight. Everyone was laughing. Outside, it was raining, just like the day of the accident. But inside, it was warm and bright. I could almost smell Mom's cookies baking. "This could have been tonight," Jesus said softly, "if the phones had been put away." My heart felt like it was breaking. I never realized how much I'd missed by staring at a screen. "Madison," Jesus said, "your time here isn't finished. You have an important message to share." "But I don't want to go back," I said, and I meant it. Being with him felt so good, so right. "I want to stay with you." He smiled that smile that made me feel completely loved. "I'm always with you, Madison, but your family needs you and others need to hear what you've seen." "Will they listen?" I asked. "Some will," he said, "and that's enough to start changing things." He touched my forehead and suddenly I felt myself being pulled back, away from his light, through the tunnel again, faster and faster. Then pain, so much pain, beeping machines, bright hospital lights, someone yelling, "She's back! We've got a pulse!" I gasped for air, my chest burning like I'd swallowed fire. My whole body hurt. I couldn't move my left leg. There was a tube down my throat. The doctors called it a miracle. They said my heart had stopped for 12 minutes. They said I should have brain damage, but all my tests came back normal. They couldn't explain it. Mom cried for 3 days straight. Dad, who had been away on a business trip, refused to leave my hospital room after he arrived. Tyler made me a card that said, "Best sister ever," even though I'd been pretty mean to him lately. When they finally took the breathing tube out, the first thing I said was, "Where's my phone?" Mom looked surprised. "Honey, it was destroyed in the crash." And I started crying, not because I missed my phone, but because I was relieved it was gone. It took weeks before I could tell them everything I'd seen. At first, I was afraid they wouldn't believe me, but something had changed in me, and they could see it. The first night I was home from the hospital, I asked everyone to put their phones in a basket. Then I told them about Jesus, about the screens, about the shadows, about the moments we'd lost. I told them how the devices we think keep us connected are actually tearing us apart. Dad cried. I'd never seen him cry before. That was 6 months ago. Our house is different now. We have a phone box that all devices go into during family time. We started playing board games on Friday nights. Mom deleted most of her social media apps. Dad stopped bringing his laptop home from work. Tyler still plays games, but with a timer, and mostly ones we can play together. The hardest part was going back to school and telling my friends. Some of them thought I was weird now. Some stopped hanging out with me because I wouldn't spend lunch period scrolling through TikTok anymore, but some listened. My best friend Zoe deleted Snapchat after I told her what I saw. She said she'd been feeling more anxious and sad lately, but couldn't figure out why. Now she's sleeping better. Her mom sent my mom a thank you text. I still struggle sometimes. Those apps are designed to pull you back in. Sometimes I borrow Mom's phone and find myself mindlessly scrolling before I even realize what I'm doing. The habit is strong, but now I can feel when it's happening, like Jesus opened my eyes to see the chains. If you're watching this, I want you to try something. Just for one day, put your phone away. Look at the people around you, really look at them. Listen when they talk. Feel the sun on your face without taking a picture of it. You might be surprised by what you hear in the quiet. Jesus told me that the enemy can't create anything. He can only distort what God made. He took our need for connection and twisted it into something that actually isolates us. He took our desire to be known and loved and convinced us that likes and followers could fill that hole. They can't, they never will. I know some people won't believe my story, that's okay. But if you're a parent watching this, please hear me. Your kids need you to be brave. They need you to set boundaries they can't set for themselves. They need you to create space where God's voice can be louder than the screens. And if you're my age, watching this, know that you're worth more than your follower count. The filtered, perfect lives you see online aren't real. The shadows want you to believe you're missing out, but the truth is, life, real life, is happening right now, all around you, and Jesus is trying to get your attention. Maybe this video is one way he's doing that. I don't have all the answers. I'm just a 14-year-old girl who died for 12 minutes and came back different. But I know what I saw, I know what I felt, and I know we can't keep living like this, heads down, thumbs scrolling, hearts empty. Put down your phone. Look up. He's waiting to show you what really matters. Because the truth is, none of us know how much time we have left. And I don't want to waste another second of mine on shadows and screens.
I would like Gen Z, Alpha Generation, if you're here today, would you stand to your feet so I can pray for you? All over this place, stand.